much.
Welcome, everyone. I'm on a special night. TX4 Jedi Network. The weekly fights with Austin and Chef Dad. Austin will be in the building shortly, coming out of work, so I'll fill in on staying past my bedtime as we have a little chuckle. Chef Dad, it's a funny night. What's going on, my friend?
Oh, sorry. I'm laughing. This is the last image of the intro song is you doing the face fake with Bruce Buffer. And this is the first time you've been on the show ever since you've done that, I believe. So I don't know.
It's time.
It's time. Oh, man, but I'm good. I'm good. I'm getting ready for Thanksgiving. Family's doing well. Everyone's doing well. Hope everyone's family is doing safe. Everyone joins in today with us as we break down these fights. It was a great card.
It was a great card. But first of all, we're a little bit off topic. We're going to talk about boxing. We're going to go start off with boxing until Austin gets here. I'll do the boxing part of it. We'll start off first. I just wanted my thoughts. I haven't been on and haven't been able to give you my thoughts of the unification of the super middleweight Canelo Alvarez. What a good fight there. I know we're a week behind when it passed already, but I just wanted to bring it up to fruition. Was Canelo Alvarez winning, winning that fight. Phenomenal bout for him. Now he's moving up to cruiserweight. Wow. I must say wow, because wow, I don't think his skill set is there, but I don't think his body weight can handle the cruiserweight of 170 plus pounds. He might just have to stay super middleweight, in my opinion. I don't know. We shall see. I mean, kudos to him that he's going to try to take that challenge and move up in weight and attack. And we see he already has an opponent up ready to go. We shall see when he will fight. Probably around Cinco de Mayo, maybe. Depending how everything works out, the money and promotions. What's your thoughts on Canelo Alvarez unifying that belt in that fashion he did?
It's very impressive. I don't know, like it, because some time passed and the way you just brought it up, my mind is more so thinking on his perceived movement to go up to cruiserweight, I believe. But it was very impressive fight. You saw that after the fight, him and Plant had a nice exchange of words after, because of the heated pre-fight and the heated, you know, face-off that they had against each other, the words that were exchanged. And so they had a nice exchange of words after the fight, and how, you know, just after the, you know, after all the blood has been spilled and the punches have been thrown, that two men can just stand in a square circle and just have that conversation and understand that there were some misunderstandings, but at the same point, they were both trying to sell a fight. And so they had to go to, you know, whatever distances they had to go to. With Canelo moving up to cruiserweight, I'm with you on you know, his body maybe not being able to take on the weight and moving up to the weight class with other people that are more naturally in that weight. Excuse me. But the other thing I wanted to mention also was the fact that it's very rare that when you have an athlete in a division, you see this going on really in certain sports and other sports, because the movement to another division is much harder. But with boxing, you can see with combat sports, all it is really just putting on weight. And I don't want to say that that's easy, but it can be planned out based on the physiology of a human being able to put on the weight. But I think with Canelo, man, he's kind of spoiling a chance to truly be dominant in a weight class and like shut down the conversation. You can have the ability to essentially dominate a weight class for a period of time. And not only that, but then shut down the conversation to say, like, hey, who is the best so-and-so of all time? Like, the impressive wins that he's getting, they help his case. But then getting it in a duration of time, like having that longevity also helps, because you can see a guy in LeBron James, like his fight for GOAT status in the NBA isn't really the championships, but it's the longevity. So that's just my thoughts right there.
I see. No, that's a good thought with that. Well, Austin will be coming in shortly. I'll wrap up the we'll wrap up a little bit of the boxing right now, and we'll bring in Austin to finish off the MMA and his portion of the program. I wanted to do the boxing, and with that said, we had a fight over the weekend. We'll keep an eye on Canelo Alvarez, but we'll have more to elaborate on Canelo Alvarez upcoming once the fight gets announced and we have a date time. We'll break that down more on his opponent. But we had a fight over the weekend. Of course, a really good fight with two young, promising fighters in Crawford and Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter. They both fought for that WBO welterweight championship, and we saw Crawford beat Porter to retain his WBO welterweight championship in a fight where people said it was a lot of controversy with it, the stoppage. And that title, you know, I didn't see any controversy. I thought it was the right call there. Terrence Crawford defeats Sean Porter by TKO in the 10th round, excuse me, at a minute and 21 second mark. I'm going to give my thoughts after your thoughts with that. What's your thought on that decision? And were you think it was controversial, or you think it was well played?
The decision wasn't controversial. I understand some people thought it was controversial that Sean Porter's dad, and also his trainer, decided to throw in the towel at a certain point, but I don't think that was controversial either. It's in the corner's best interest to save their fighter, to fight for another day, but also to live on their life. You know, they train their athletes not only so that they can, you know, fight in the best condition, but also when you live, you know, training, when you live, you know, in that lifestyle where it's a strict training habit and, you know, it's a strict diet and things of that nature, you tend to live longer because you take care of your body. So that's something that trainers will always have the best interest. Trainers should always have the best interest in for their fighters. It was the correct decision. It was a great fight. But it was a correct decision in the way that Terrence Crawford was executing later on in the round. We saw that Sean Porter had his chances early on in the round. He had a great fight all throughout. But then Terrence Crawford started to come along, I'd say around the 6th, 7th round. And it went on into the 10th, 11th round is when he started to execute his finishes. The 10th, right? The 10th round was when he started to execute his finishes. He knocked him down clean. It wasn't from the way that Sean Porter kept getting up from the knockdowns, even though it was multiple knockdowns, it wasn't damaging knockdowns to where, like, you know, Sean Porter couldn't get back up. He couldn't just recalibrate and maybe give himself a fighting chance. But the rules are the rules, and, you know, you can't have that many knockdowns consecutively within a round. And so because he couldn't stay up on his feet, it was what it was. My analysis in that fight, the only thing I could say was that I felt that, if anything, maybe the... Because they were... Sean Porter had really nice flurries. I could say maybe the fourth round was his best chance of knocking out Terrence Crawford, because he had some flurries there where he landed a couple of punches while Crawford was backing up, and Crawford's defense was kind of suspect, where he kind of just had his hand on the side of his face to try and block any hooks. But Sean was coming in with straight punches, and so that was what Terrence Crawford ended up eating. So maybe that was his best chance, but he didn't execute in those moments. So later on down the fight, it kind of seemed like Sean Porter was just point fighting, and that's where his demise started coming in, because he let Terrence Crawford get comfortable, and Crawford made the adjustments that a champion makes, and then he executed.
I see that. My thought was the same. It was a good fight. Terrence Crawford was winning the whole fight. The controversy, to me, there was none. A trainer, and it's not because of his dad, but it's there. I call it a fine line there. Crawford, not yes, he knocked down Porter twice. And it weren't, like you said, nothing vicious, nothing to knock him down where you think he's taking unnecessary hits. But as a corner, you see this, my fighter's losing, he's fighting, losing on the scorecard, let alone in boxing rules. I know it's different from MMA, and you guys could debate it when you break it down. I always say in boxing, you got to knock down the champion. If you're going to take strip and beat a defending champion his title, normally you got to either knock them down, or you really, and sometimes it's hard, even when you see when you're thinking the fighter is winning all the rounds on decision, a lot of times it always ends up being a majority draw. They usually, the championship rarely changes hands on a decision. Usually, if you outbox a boxer, you really got to defeat the champion. They use that kind of rule in boxing. And my point is, I'll let you get there in there, because I know we got good back and forth on that one. Was as a fighter, he's losing all the cards, plus he got a 10-7 round. I don't think Porter has enough. This is me speaking as a trainer, paraphrasing. Doesn't have enough to knock down Crawford, because Crawford's defense and counter defense was really on point from the championship rounds up. And he says, you know what? I'm just going to throw in the towel. There is no necessary you to getting any hit in the temple, in the head, and you're going to pay the price, not just in the moment, 10 to 15 years later. I know maybe we're overthinking it. That could be. But you, as a father, you don't want to see your son. And I heard it from the great journal fitter, that senior. You don't want to see your son taking unnecessary hits to the head. And you get him out of there safe and sound. And I think that's what happened in that fight with Porter. And Porter announced his retirement after that. But go ahead and elaborate on what you were going to say about the referees, Chef Dan.
It is, to what you just brought up, it is unfortunate that Sean Porter announced his retirement. But at the same time, he's a great analyst for the game. And so he always has a seat open right there at ESPN. I hope he continues analyzing the game. I hope he continues calling boxing fights, because he is a great mind. And the way he calls certain fights, it's just a beauty, a work of art and a beauty, and knowing the mind of a fighter like that. And so, just kudos to him, though, in his career and everything he's accomplished. That man is a champion. He's a former champion. So a due respect is given to him. But like you were saying, it's with boxing, in the difference between boxing and MMA, I think the reason why you have such a difference is because the methods of the available methods of attack. And so let's say a champion does get knocked down, right? And he's kind of wobbling, he's kind of wobbly in the first round. If for the next five rounds in MMA, he decides to just, you know, take it to grappling, he's never really landing a serious blow. He never really has a submission in, but he's constantly working. There's a chance for him to eke out that round, even if the fighter can get back up on his feet, and we can see he's more dominant in the stand-up game. There are ways to, you know, finagle and finesse around. But with boxing, because of the limited weapons, I can agree with you there that, you know, it takes a lot more for a challenger to defeat a champion. You can't really just outbox the champion. You kind of have to land defining blows. You have to see the damage being done consistently, things of that nature. So that's one of the things going into the fight. With Sean Porter's case, man, the way you described it was perfect. He's kind of losing the round, not 10-8, 10-7. Now you're going into the championship rounds, and we're already noting that due to the gas tank he's displaying, he's kind of point fighting at this point, just landing for points. He has to go for a knockout. He doesn't have it in him. Like, the math just doesn't add up fighter-wise for him to win the fight. There is no last gusto for him to where he can leave himself defenseless, because he's already gotten three knockdowns. If anything, that's a losing strategy. And so his corner did the best thing for him in getting him safely out of there. And that, yeah, you just kind of move on to live on and, you know, be for your family and things of that nature. So a salute to Sean Porter for putting on a great show.
and a great boxing career. A very entertaining fighter, a very good fighter. I enjoyed his fights, and I'm going to enjoy him in commentary with ESPN. I think he's a really smart, articulated, knowledgeable analyst, and or comment content, whatever he wants to do with the boxing world. And boxing is going to need a Sean Porter to break us down these fights and give us the insights and the techniques. And looking forward, hopefully he stays on and does continue doing great work as a broadcaster going forward with that. Chef Dan, with that said, I'm going to preview this weekend's upcoming card and bring Austin in. Austin is in the building, so I don't want to take more time of this program here with you. I just want to let everyone know this weekend on The Zone, we have a big, big fight. Teofilo Lopez versus George Camboza. Those two young fighters, they're thrilling in the spotlights. You know, the New York native, the 24-year New Yorker, Honduran native, is going to take on this challenger. A lot of bad blood between both of these guys, back and forth with multiple promoters. A lot of trash talking. They almost fought on stage, and they're ready to set the battle on Saturday night. Man, it's going to be really good to see. It's for the Unified World Lightweight Championship on The Zone. I can't wait to catch that fight. I'll have more breakdown with it. Maybe I'll do a quick podcast on Friday to give you more in the in-depth analysis of what I'm thinking, what I'm thought. Because right now, besides Deontay Wilder, Teofilo Lopez is one of my favorite fighters. Not just because he's from New York and from Brooklyn, he's also from my heritage as well, Honduran, and I just like the kid. I just want him to continue to do real good. If you notice me, when I used to do my promos, my intros, I always had Teofilo Lopez always on my intros on whenever I started a program. So I'm a big fan of him. With all that said, we look forward to see that. I can't wait to see Saturday night, that fight. With that said, I'm going to step him out for a moment to bring in Austin. Thank you guys for allowing me to speak a few minutes here on the boxing part of the corner. I'll have more boxing in depth. But listen to us on the podcast here. Thank you, everyone, listening on Spotify today. And I appreciate all the listeners in Anchor FM and all the other podcasts. You, Google, I appreciate you guys. We'll leave you here with Austin in a minute. Chef Dan, talk about this card. Chef Dan, I'll talk to you on the next time. And we'll definitely be breaking it down.
Most definitely. It's going to be a great card. One moment, I have to pull it up. Jedi just let us know that he's a fan of Teofimo Lopez. I'm excited and looking forward to that. I know I'm gonna have some time off from really working, so I'm gonna look forward to that fight. But we're here to also break down the UFC. I know we're going to have Austin joining us very soon, but let me kick it off and start things off with really breaking down the main event, Caitlin Vieira versus Miesha Tate. This went the full distance, but Caitlin Vieira won the fight via a unanimous decision. So Caitlin goes on to a record of 12-2, and Miesha Tate falls to 19-8. Watching this fight, man, this fight went I know last time that we broke it down, we said that it was Miesha Tate's fight to lose because she really had to try and mix it up more and go to the ground. But if I don't know, Caitlin Vieira is super game. I was so wrong about her because Caitlin tried, like, I can say really the best chance that the best chance that Miesha had really when winning this fight was when Caitlin Vieira tried to go for a takedown and Miesha reversed it and she essentially got on top. But that was near the end of the first round. But then Caitlin really made the adjustment from that point on. So this fight stayed on the stayed on its feet, and Caitlin was kind of just popping Miesha Tate whenever she wanted. Also, Miesha had her chances. She struck Caitlin too. I could say that both of these fighters really didn't care about defense on the stand-up game, but Caitlin was just more so confident in her stand-up that she was able to tag Miesha whenever she wanted to. And whenever Miesha kept coming in, she had something waiting for her right there. it just progressively got more so on in that breakdown, you know, from rounds 2 to 5, really. The other thing I could say, what was the one thing I wanted to point out as well? Caitlin stuffing all of Misha's takedown attempts from rounds 2 to 5 was very, very smart. I saw the way she stuffed them, really didn't let her get a chance. Even when she was along the cage, when they were in the clinch, Misha didn't really have a chance of getting any takedowns because Caitlin was really solid in her ground defense and her takedown defense. What was the last thing? It's just the difference in their stand-up game. It wasn't like Caitlin Vieira was outclassing Misha Tate. It was just that she was showing more damage with her punches because Misha ended up she had more power in her punches and Misha ended up with the bloody nose. But as far as skill wise, watching that fight, skill wise, it wasn't like Misha was so far behind Caitlin that it was just, you know, an outclassing. It just felt like Caitlin just spent more time, you know, doing stand, you know, punching, being a boxer, having those experiences than Misha. So that was the difference, just having that experience. So knowing the range and knowing when to punch was the key difference right there. And Misha just couldn't mix it up. If she had the chance to really mix things up, it would have been more so her, you know, it could have been a more so even fight going into the fifth round, but she never had a chance to truly have a mixing of the martial arts. What was your breakdown on the fight?
Well, hang on. Looks like I'm frozen. Can you hear me though?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're just frozen. You can break it down.
Okay, apologize for the frozen on the screen if you're watching as a video, but I felt like this fight was somewhat kind of frustrating, but like, I feel like Vieira was too hesitant at times. Even her coach, Andre Parineris, was telling her, like, stop being hesitant, because every time she hit Misha, she had, like, damage and stuff. Like, you could tell that shots rocked her more so than Misha's shots, and, like, she gave her too much respect. It seemed like she would just punch her and then, like, not punch, not follow up. Even though it was working, she clearly was hitting Misha. And every time Misha hit her, she would counter her right back, too. That's another thing I watched through this fight, was that. And Misha couldn't get any takedowns, which was key, was kind of like key to her. You know, it was to mix it up, like you mentioned, but she couldn't. I think Misha got one takedown, actually, I believe, but Vieira got it immediately. I think it was like fourth round. I forget which round. But yeah, other than that, like, still, like, Vieira had the better shots, cleaner shots. And at times, she didn't really, like, go for it like she should have. She catches one shot, that's it. And like I said, her coaches and Cormier were mentioning that she should have, you know, kept throwing more shots. And then Coach Dean Thomas, when, you know, they have, like, little coaches' perspective, like, mentioned that, like, it seemed like she was almost, like, maybe giving Misha too much respect. I think it was Dean Thomas or Cormier mentioned, instead of, like, going out there and, like, you know, because when you can see, like, when Vieira was, you know, in the fifth round, she drew more action. She got better results. That's how she busted Misha's, like, nose. Yeah, her nose, right?
Yeah, nose and her lip.
Okay. I knew it was one of the two. It was both. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, she busted her both lip and nose. It kind of was, like, you know, a little like Amanda Nunes-ish, you know, like her power and, like, her punching ability. Because remember, her nose broken by Amanda, and she lost the title. And, like, she's got, like, and, like, Kellen's got, like, power, so, like, Amanda. Not saying she's Amanda, but she's talented enough and trains at a great gym in Nova União in Brazil with Coach Andre Parineris, who's coached Jose Aldo for his career, coaching Peralta world title, and Coach Claudia Gadelha to a world title fight. So, she, you know, Vieira's talented. She clearly showed it, but she's just got to, like, you know, not be, you know, so gun-shy or too much respectful. Now, you know, hope maybe this is a learning lesson for her because this was her first main event of her career, her biggest fight ever. You know, this is her biggest fight, and going into legend Misha Tate. And
But yeah, good performance by Vieira. Could definitely done more, and which I hope, which for her sake, if she does that, I mean, she could be a new contender for that division, because that division needs new contenders desperately. I mean, it's only so many girls Amanda Nunes can beat before she has no competition left. So hopefully Vieira could be someone that could potentially be a new challenger, especially to be a legend of Misha Tate. I mean, why not her and Holly Holm fight? I mean, the winner of that fight, you can make an argument, deserves a title fight against Amanda Nunes. If they're not going to do Amanda and Valentina trilogy like they should, in my opinion.
I mean, Valentina is hunting for it, but it seems like... I mean, she's clearly got nothing else to do, because her division still has to decide who the next contender is.
Yeah, I mean, she beats Pena. I mean, Julia Pena. Who else is left? I mean...
Really?
I mean, unless you want to do Vera and Irene Aldana again, maybe that winner of that, but... I don't know. Like I said, it's like, you know, one of those three girls I mentioned, you know, Holm, Aldana, or Vieira probably needs like one big more victory to even put themselves as a challenger for Amanda Nunes. So yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of competition like left. Not a lot of girls. Even if they do win, it's not like Amanda you can see the potential challenger to Amanda possibly.
Most definitely, I agree with you there. So it seems like the only fight left would be Vieira versus Holm for the number one contendership. Let that decide. And while that's happening, they should have that. That should be the undercard to freaking Valentina versus Nunes.
Most definitely. I mean, both ladies in the divisions don't have anybody really like. That's like a clear challenger. I mean, like I mentioned, it was last week that all the top four girls in the flyweight division, Valentina's beaten all of them recently.
So she still has, like, yeah, her division still has to figure out who.
Right.
I'm
just trying to pull up the rankings, you know, for that division. Yeah, Vieira, number six. Vlad 5, Pena 4, Aldana 3, Holm 2, Drammy 1. Yeah, like I said, so maybe you can do Vieira Drammy or Vieira Holm. I mean, like I said, I think your idea, we mentioned Holm and Vieira probably be the best option for a normal contender fight.
We might have to put this conversation on hold.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I just looked at the ranking and we might have to put this conversation on hold. Okay, let's move on to the next fight. We have Sean Brady versus Michael Chiesa. Sean Brady wins this fight. All three judges scored it a unanimous decision. So, Sean Brady remains undefeated while Michael Chiesa falls to 17-6. Sean Brady is 15-0 for his career. Austin, you tell me what you saw in this fight.
I saw a guy who was Sean Brady who, despite not having a wrestling background, which I don't believe he does, very, you know, was good at takedowns and very strong, which Chiesa's like a bigger guy. I mean, just looking at that, Chiesa was the bigger fighter of the two. Kind of crazy that he even made 155. I mean, this is absurd, but yeah. It seemed like he was like a lot. Seemed like he was able to hold Chiesa down and go for submission attempts, although Chiesa was able to fight him off. However, when it got to the stand up, Chiesa was better at it. He threw like two knees that hurt Brady and threw a couple punches that, you know, that kind of, you know, stunned Brady. Seemed like when the fight was able to keep standing, Chiesa had the advantage, but Brady was able to get him down, control him, and keep him there, and do some damage on the ground, and go for some submission attempts, although it wasn't successful on most of them. Chiesa was able to fight. Oh, sorry about that, Mike. Chiesa was able to fight him off mostly, but like I said, Brady was, you know, was effective with his takedowns, and I think that was the story of the fight. Brady controlled one of the grappling exchanges for the most part. While striking-wise, Chiesa was the better fighter. It's just unfortunately, it was only three rounds. It was like a five-rounder. I mean, it possibly Kiesa maybe won the fight based on the way the third round was going, where Kiesa was able to have more success, you know, staying up and be able to not allow Brady to take him down. That's what I saw. I saw a guy in Brady who is a guy to watch out for in this division, but it's obviously some things maybe he has to work on. Man, I'm pretty sure he's going to work on it. And we'll see what Sean Brady is in this division, considering he's a new face in this welterweight division.
Okay. All right. That was a lot you threw at me just now.
Sorry.
Let me get to – nah, it's okay. I got to break down each fighter individually. Let me get to Michael Chiesa first. Michael Chiesa, he has complained at times. There was a time where he had a legitimate, where he felt he had a legitimate case to be the next contender for the title, right? And this is the same Michael Chiesa we know to be a wrestler. Are we both correct?
You're right.
For him to have gotten controlled the way he got controlled in the wrestling part of this fight was very disheartening for me. Now, I know Sean Brady's strength was a problem for him to deal with, because it kind of, the only time he felt he had a chance was later on in the third round when the strength decided to wane a little. But for the most part, Sean Brady was consistent all throughout with his pressure and keeping Michael Chiesa right where he needed him to be to win out the round via decision. Michael Chiesa winning the fight in the stand-up game, that was surprising to me, right? But the reason why I was shaking my head when I brought up this fight was because the level of activity he needed to win in the stand-up game, he only saw it coming. We only saw it happening in the third round after his trainers told him he's down two rounds. Realistically, he should have been doing that, what he was doing in the end of the third round, even in the beginning of it, in the second round. He had the options to. He was just so scared of Sean Brady maybe grabbing him or something and taking him down, which was surprising to me because he was the wrestler. He was known to be the wrestler. And so it was like, maybe Vicente Luque getting him via Darce choke wasn't as crazy as we thought it was.
Maybe, yeah. It seems like it wasn't. Yeah, you're right. Now you think about it, you mentioned the fact that he got controlled by Brady and Chiesa's the wrestler. It seemed like that him getting submitted back in July. Yeah, August. Yeah, it was August, actually, not July. Was not as crazy as we thought. You mentioned.
Okay, so now on to Sean Brady. Impressive victory, doing what he did to Michael Chiesa. Very impressive. He's not there yet.
No.
I believe he just moved up to number 8.
Yeah, he's not. So.
Yeah, he's not there yet. He's not there yet, and the reason being is because you were losing in a stand-up exchange against Michael Chiesa. And really, one of the things that Dean Thomas had broken down, which is why Michael Chiesa wasn't comfortable, was because he kept getting the eye poke warnings in the first round. And really what he wanted to do was keep his hand in this motion to kind of gauge the range between him and Sean Brady in order to fight the wrestling that Sean Brady was going to provide.
Good point. The eye poke to happen. That's right.
Kamaru Usman isn't doing that. He's gauging distance with a jab. And once he touches you and he feels comfortable, he's going to keep touching you. And that level of activity that we saw Sean Brady, that Michael Chiesa should have had in this, in the second round that he had in the third round, Kamaru Usman is going to unleash that at some point in the first round. Once he starts, once he starts getting that feel for Sean Brady within the jab. it's just not going to be comfortable for him. He's not ready yet. He still has to fight a few more guys. Looking at the ranking right now, seems that Masvidal is going to be tied up with Covington. Leon's going to be tied up with Usman. Luke might have either Burns or Wonderboy. Might get Khamzat.
I'm glad you mentioned Khamzat because I think Khamzat actually is. I think he called out Brady, or like is interested in fighting Brady, something or one or the other. It seems like their names have been linked, and which I mean they're both rising contenders who are undefeated. I mean, I think I'm trying to remember one. I think maybe Khamzat called him out or something like that.
Khamzat had better have been the one to call him out because. I'm not going to lie, this idea that everyone's kind of floating around for Khamzat to face Nick Diaz. I said not Nick Diaz. Nate Diaz.
Crazy.
Makes no sense to me. That's not even a lateral move for Khamzat.
I agree. It does nothing for him.
It does nothing for him.
I mean, let me find news. Yeah, he wants to call out. Brady.
Yeah, so if Khamzat gets that matchup against Brady, that'll be interesting because if Brady feels like he can, you know, get the jump on Khamzat in wrestling, that'd be interesting to see.
Right, I mean, that would be interesting to see. Like I said, they're both like top, well, Khamzat's number 11 because Brady's rising rankings kind of knocked down Khamzat to number 11, but I was gonna say two top 10 guys who just got in the rankings with
both undefeated.
Yes, exactly. Contenders. You could build those up as the two young studs, competing each other. I mean, some people might claim this might be the first of two means, arguably. Who knows? I'm not saying it is, but you never know. Like I said, they're both talented. You can tell both guys are. I mean, Hamza, we know it's the truth. I mean, Hamza's just what he's doing is just remarkable. And Sean Brady, you know, he's climbed his way to the ranks. You know, I think he's won like 5 fights in the UFC or 6 fights. I don't remember how. I know 2019 made his debut. Like, I think October of 2019.
Hmm.
Dan's looking up right now. As Dan's looking up, we want to give a shout out to Alex, who's watching us from Puerto Rico, seems like. Yep, looky little Puerto Rico. Shout out to you, Alex, for watching us.
He's on a, well, they're saying, USC stats are saying he's on a 9-fight win streak, 6 wins by KO, 3 by submission. He's 10-0 in his career, but I believe Khamzat. But I believe he had Gerard Meerschaert. He just fought
Legion.
Yeah.
I also asking Sean Brady.
Sean Brady. Okay. Sean Brady's 15-0.
No. I was talking about how many like UFC fights has he had? Cause I know Hamza's at 4. When you know he's doing a remarkable rate. I was just giving Brady credit for rising through the ranks. You know, I think that was his 5th UFC victory.
Hamza has had 4 UFC fights.
Yeah.
How many has Brady had?
I was gonna say, I heard like Sean was one of the fighters that fought that actually won on his card. So like Philly fighters were what did well on his card, which is kind of cool to see, considering, for a long time, we think of Philadelphia MMA, you think of Eddie Alvarez, who's been, in the ring, and the guy that basically held Philadelphia MMA for a while, and, legend, and then Paul Felder had success. Now you're seeing, other guys in Philadelphia, come out and start competing, doing well. Considering, when I think of, Philly is a kind of, historically been a boxing town. And a town of fighters from Joe Frazier to Bernard Hopkins and guys like that, et cetera.
Most definitely. But it seems like Sean Brady has had 5 UFC fights, so he's not that far off from Khamzat. This could be a potential fight.
It could be, or maybe the UFC was to separate them for now, unless maybe, like, because realistically, both Hamza and, well, more so Brady and Hamza. Hamza, if he has one more spectacular performance, they might give him a title fight against Kamaru, considering his name and,
you know. No, I mean, the way Dana has said it, he's kind of alluded to it. He's like, because when they asked him, like, how many fights is Hamza away from, you know, fighting Kamaru Usman, is he like one or two fights away? Like, Dana kind of just like laughed it off and said, no, he's like a far, like he's a while away from fighting Kamaru Usman.
He said realistically he is.
Hamza dings though.
Let's say he fights Neil Magny, destroys him, and then maybe you'd be what, one more fight away from a title fight at that point?
I mean, looking at the rankings, let's see this right now. He's number 11. Bilal Muhammad, I believe he has a he's tied up with a fight. I know Neil Magny's been Wonderboy. What? Yeah, Bilal Muhammad's fighting Wonderboy, right?
Yes, in December.
Okay, so Neil Magny's calling him out. That would, if he beats Neil Magny, that boosts him up to number 7. Then maybe at that point you can have the him versus Sean Brady fight. Because that's 7 versus 8.
I was gonna say. I think I can see a scenario where both guys fight early next year, both win, and then the winner of that fight maybe fights for a title. Honestly, both guys are, to me, in my opinion, two good performances, like two very good performances away from my world title. Like I said, it has to be good performances. Like, can't be just I barely get by victory. It has to be like actually legitimately great performances.
Now I'm about to throw a whole wrench into your operation.
All right.
Sean Brady gets you said these guys get great performances, right? Yes, so now let's say you want to line them up each for a title fight. What are you now going to tell Vicente Luque?
Well, my thing is, why can't Luque get a title fight before the fight? Why can't he get one before them? Wait, hold on. Who says Luque has a fight tomorrow?
I mean, but Kamara's coming off of a 5-round fight with Colby Covington, so he has to rest and recuperate. And then he's going to have a fight with Leon Edwards. Whatever the result is, both guys are going to have to rest and recuperate. So in that time, these two guys are what, going to fight only once?
No, they fight twice the next year. And Hamza's not fight once.
Okay, so like, but all the during this whole time, you're telling me you're just going to keep Vicente Luque on the bench?
That's the thing though. Like, who's he gonna fight? Because no one fight Gilbert Burns. That's the problem. He doesn't like fight Gilbert.
It doesn't make any sense. It's not the perfect fight. I don't think that's the perfect fight.
No, I'm saying like the winner of that fight fights the winner of Leon and Kamaru. Don't think that makes sense. If they were to fight,
nah.
Really?
Because Gilbert. What, after Kamaru, Gilbert's last fight was Wonderboy, right?
Yeah.
And that was controversial because they said he landed a lot of blows to the back of the head.
I forgot about that. So I gotta watch that fight and see, because I honestly forgot that about that. Not saying you're wrong, but I just forgot that about that.
That was Gilbert Burns' last performance, so it really wasn't impressive like that.
Yeah,
so
but
if you tell me he goes from that to him fighting Vicente Luque and those two guys get the number one contendership, Gilbert Burns, no one can say he can't get another crack at the title again.
Right.
Unless Kamaru says, like, nah, that doesn't interest me. I want right after Leon, Vicente's right up next.
Right. I mean, Luque's in a tough spot because Gilbert doesn't want to fight him. Colby and Jorge seems like the logical matchup. Leon's probably fighting Kamaru. You know, Neil Magny's probably going to, you know, Hamza and Neil Magny probably. I mean, unless Luque takes the Brady fight, which I don't see happening. I mean, unless he does. You never know. Actually, you never know. Plus, Bilal
Muhammad. That's interesting that you brought that up. I want to attack that real quick. If he does, let's say Luque takes the Brady fight. Is that not another impressive win for Luque that solidifies a title shot for him?
Yeah, it would be, yes, because he gets Brady's first loss. That would be like a rising contender. Gives him his first loss. I mean, that definitely warrants a title fight. But I don't know if Luke is going to take the fight, though. Would he take it? That's the question.
I mean, here's my thing. You don't take a fight unless you think, like, you know, there's a loss situation, right? He is putting up his ranking, right?
Right.
But it's a win-win-win for everyone. If Sean Brady wins, Sean Brady has a chance to really get to climb up in the ranking and, you know, impress people, become a talking point, things of that nature. If Vicente Luque wins, he beats Sean Brady. He beat Sean Brady, who he hands his first loss to, and Sean Brady has to now, sit back down, kind of relax himself because he's fought someone in the higher ranking, but he now knows what it takes to become part of the higher ranking. The UFC wins if Vicente Luque wins, because if Vicente beats Sean, it hands Sean his first loss, but Sean doesn't lose in the rankings. He stays number 8. Oh, you kind of freezing up there. So then, while Austin gets certain things, some technical difficulties sorted out, we just kind of went on a welterweight loophole because, you know, one of those Marvel Universe loopholes, because that's what happens when you get an interesting result like Sean Brady kind of dominating Michael Chiesa via the grappling route in this fight. So with that being said, I kind of want to move on to the next fight. This went on in the bantamweight division, Talia Santos versus Joanne Wood. And Talia Santos won this fight in the first round in dominant fashion via a rear naked choke. But she kind of solidified she got the rear naked choke through her striking and just having way more power than Joanne Wood really calculated for. And the reason why I kind of put the Caitlin Vieira discussion on hold, as far as maybe Valentina Shevchenko doesn't have a person, doesn't have a dance partner to decide it in the weight division, is really because looking at the ranking, this is very interesting to me. Caitlin Vieira is... I don't know. I'm trying to see where they have her ranked right now. No, Caitlin Vieira is... I'm bugging. Caitlin Vieira is a bantamweight. But the reason why I held off the... This is why my brain went... We went on a loophole. But the reason why I said to hold off on Valentina Shevchenko having a dance partner was because Talia Santos has just jumped up to number 5 ranking. Valentina Shevchenko just beat Lauren Murphy. She already beat Jennifer Maya already. She took care of Jessica Andrade. And did she fight Caitlin Chookagian yet?
Yes, she did. Last February, she destroyed her.
Destroyed her. So Talia Santos is a name that maybe Valentina Shevchenko is someone to look out for, because the way she's winning her fights, Talia Santos, is in dominant fashion. I did say I was going to look out for this fight. And watching this fight, it was nothing that Joanne Wood had for her.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, she was doing well in stand-up early on with her activity, but it wasn't, like, enough. She has no – like I said, she's not a woman that has a lot of power, Joanne Wood, you know. And, like, you know, she was doing all right, you know, with activity, and she did, you know, do, like, a good right. I remember that kind of, like, that it clean with Talia. But, like I said, she didn't have a lot of power, so it really didn't affect Talia as much. And then Talia dropped her twice. She dropped her once. You know, Joanne was able to get up, but then the second one is what really did Joanne, you know, was basically did her, you know, really was the was the damage shot for her. And Talia Gontop was able to get a rear naked choke within like seconds left of the first round. It was like the final what, 30 seconds of the first round. She didn't make Joanne, you know, Joanne Calderwood. Oh, excuse me, Joanne Wood now. Tap out the tight rear naked choke, just tighten. And it was a great performance by Talia Santos. You want to tell a statement win? That was it right there. That was the only, like, well, I should say the only statement win, because John Bray had a statement win, in my opinion. But this was, like, the clear-cut, definite, like, statement win of this whole card, because this was the only finish of the entire card. Basically, all the other fights went to decision. And she introduced herself in the title contention. Talia Santos putting away a main staple in that division. It's always a top 10, top 5 girl, Joanna Wood. And she just finished her. And her record is, what, 19-1? I know she only has one loss. She already had a good record going into this fight. Now she's got, you know, 18 or 19-1. I forget the record. It's one of those two. But she only has one loss, which was a split decision loss, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she's 19-1.
19-1, okay. So, Talia Santos, maybe it was wrong by Valentina not having challengers. I might jump the gun there, forgetting about Santos. But, I mean, you could legitimately, if you're UFC, try, you know, push for Santos and Valentina, considering how well her record and what she did with Joanne Wood. And, you know, she's won, you know, she's looked in previous UFC fights. And I think, I wrote it down last week. I said it. How many, like, knockouts and TKO she has? I think it was that or submission. She has a bunch. I forget.
Who, Talia Santos?
Santos, yes.
Talia Santos. Give me one moment.
Right. Dan's looking it up right now, just to see. For those of you listening to audio.
Talia Santos, 19-1. Striking accuracy, 50%. Grappling accuracy.
Does it tell you her MMA record? 10 wins
via knockout.
That's
4-fight win streak. 10 okay. wins via knockout. And she has 5 fights in the UFC.
Okay, so 4-1. So, like I said, her loss was a split decision loss. I do remember reading that up. But, what happened?
I know we just said it, that she is a viable name. But if I'm Valentina Shevchenko and I really, really, really want that Amanda Nunes fight, there is a way to stymie Santos. And the best way to do that, because I'm looking at her fight record, though she has 5 fights, none of them have been for 5 rounds.
That's true.
So now what you could say is that she is in the top 5, but seeing as how Valentina has beaten the current top 4, she has to have a fight with one of the top 5 main event, have it scheduled for 5 rounds. That way, even if she doesn't go 5 rounds, right? But it's scheduled. Them. Yeah, even if she beats them within 3 rounds, as long as it was scheduled for 5 rounds, then she can get the fight.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. Go finish your point.
No, but what I'm saying is there's a way for Valentina to stymie that and get the fight that she wants. And also, not only that, but looking at the ranking, there are a couple of fighters within the top 4 that Talia Santos, realistically, if she gets in there with them, I can see it possibly going 5 rounds. The one fight I don't see going 5 rounds is if she fights Jessica Andrade.
I was about to say, yeah, that's the one. I think that's a finish. Watch their power. They both got power in their hands. Two powerful Brazilian girls. One of them's finishing each other, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
And funny enough, if the UFC really wants to, you know, get some more money, that would be the fight you schedule for 5 rounds, knowing it's not going 5.
Yeah, plus it get big. I can imagine like the people in Brazil will be really into that fight, considering Andrade, she's been like, you know, former champion 115. You know, on the, you know, arguably, you know, in terms of great Brazilian female MMA fighter, she's probably number three all the time behind Cyborg and Amanda Nunes, when you think about it.
Yeah.
She's the rising contender from Brazil and Santos. I mean, yeah, like I said, I mean, UFC does well in Brazil. I mean, they're like the second biggest sport, I think, MMA behind soccer, obviously. I believe that UFC is like number two. I could be wrong. Someone correct me about that if you're any Brazilians watching us. But they're really, they're doing well. But I'm just saying, like the Brazil market, that'd be big for them to see those two fights. But and then, but also that'd be just a fun Arrington fight. I mean, she if Santos get by Andrade or any of the girls in the top four, Kukigan, Murphy, Maya. I mean, at that point, she deserves a title fight. I mean, you can make, you know, like I said, there's a legitimate case to be made that maybe she should fight the one of the top four and she beats them and yes, give her a title fight. Especially if Valentina wins the Nunes trilogy, which I think she deserved. Like I said, I think she beat Amanda's second fight, and I think that'll be a big fight. Like, I think a lot of fans of MMA, including us, want to see that third fight. So, I mean, yeah. Either way, Santos can either fight against Valentina or may fight a number one contender fight. Either way, it works out fine for Talia Santos. I mean, she's put herself in the conversation for a top title fight. She's made, you know, she made a name for herself. Now we all, now you have to pay attention to her now after this performance against Joanna Wood. Like I said, impressive performance. I know it's, you know, that's her third submission victory. She's got 13 finishes and 19 fights, so she's a finishing machine, basically.
Most definitely.
I meant not fights, but victories.
Yeah, but 19 victories, 10 wins via knockout. She is on a roll. And not only that, you know she's getting submissions, but that easily could have been a knockout victory. So with that being said, I want to move on to the next fight on the card. This one was a very interesting fight. Ronnie Yahya versus Kyung Ho Kang. This fight went unanimous decision. Ronnie Yahya wins it. He moves on to 28-10. Kyung Ho Kang falls to 17-9. This was a veteran's fight. This was completely a veteran's fight because Kyung Ho Kang really had the advantage in the stand-up game, and he wobbled Ronnie Yahya a whole bunch of times throughout the fight. I'd say really majority of it happened in the first and the third round was when he wobbled Ronnie Yahya, but Ronnie was able to just get this, he was able to take him down and from there just kind of mix it in between trying to get a submission and just landing strikes. And Ronnie was kind of just landing for points at that point. He didn't have more power than Kyung Ho Kang. It didn't look like Ronnie was trying to go for a finish via striking at any point, but he just knew if he was active enough doing both, then he was going to eke out this victory. So this was a veteran's victory, in my opinion. I don't have much to assess other than this is a learning moment for Kyung Ho Kang. I don't see Ronnie Yahya as using this style to move on up and get championship fights. This was kind of just a lateral move for him, but Kyung Ho Kang, definitely this is a learning moment for him because the power was there in his striking. And he just had to have it wasn't really about him knowing when to strike. It's all about things like footwork and knowing what to do when certain situations arise. He didn't have that knowledge then, but he can watch the tape and then gain that knowledge, practice, and execute for the next fight. What was your assessment on this fight?
I was going to say, unfortunately, I didn't get to see this fight or the rest of the fights. I didn't get to see. I was only able to see the last three fights, the Santos Wood fight and then the co-main event, the main event. I didn't get to see these fights, the rest of the fights, unfortunately. Even though I did want to see the Adrian Yanez fight, which I'm still mad at myself for not watching it.
Austin, if I had the – oh, man. Oh, man, we're going to talk after the show.
All right.
We're going to talk after the show. But that Adrian Yanez fight versus Dangerous Davy Grant. Oh, my God. Fight of the night.
I heard,
fight
yeah.
Of the night. Adrian Yanez and it kept bugging me while I was like, yo, why am I such a big fan of this guy? Why am I such a big fan of this guy? And then I heard DC say it right in the beginning of this fight, and then it clicked with me immediately. They said he reminds everyone of a young Jorge Masvidal back when he was fighting in those Kimbo days. You know, Jorge with the cut that was underage and lying about his age and just trying to get in those fights. And even to now, like the striking and things of that nature. But he's way more polished than what Jorge was back in the day. Like, he's Jorge now, the skills now, but he looks like young Jorge. And man, first of all, rest in peace to his trainer, Scalise, who passed away.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Rest in peace to him. I forgot about that, yeah.
Adrian Yanez. Oh, my God. That is a bad man. His striking. And Davy Grant had some moments. He hit Yanez with some blows that, you know, because the way Dangerous Davy fights, he kind of loops and he throws big strikes. But then right after that, he, you know, follows it up with some great striking and things of that nature. But Adrian Yanez, he just kind of knew what to do with his body. He's not kicking too much. He does low kicks, things of that nature. But then the way he defends is he rolls all the striking with his body and rolls his head and things of that nature. And then he comes in the middle of Davy Grant's punches. Or right after Davy throws a spinning back fist and he turns around, Yanez's footwork is so clean. He's right there. Pop, pop, lands 1-2. Davy Grant was bloodied up and things of that nature. The only thing that was kind of surprising to me was that one of the judges had it like 30-27 Davy Grant. It was odd to me because you have to watch the fight, Austin. You really, I'm going to send you some things in order to watch the fight. But oh my God, this was fight of the night. Excellent, excellent. Adrian Yanez, he needs more fights.
Yeah, seems like it. Seems so. I mean, everyone, I feel like he was one of the guys that people were talking about besides the co-main event. It was Yanez. Everyone was talking about Yanez was getting a lot of love. And it seemed like rightfully so based on what you described and what others have described. Like I said, I want to watch it. I was like, you know, unfortunately ESPN Plus was kind of, it was acting up, so I couldn't like watch it like, you know, like the way I want, you know, way typically, unfortunately. But still, damn, I do want to watch now. Like I said, now you got me hyped in this fight. You got me hyped up.
Nah, you got to watch this fight, bro. Like, in Adrian Yanez's ear, he had the meanest cauliflower ear after this fight.
Ooh, ooh.
Like, even, like, you got to see, because DC even touched the ear.
Ooh, and I got
to see. And I don't remember who else was on the call, but they was like, yo, after DC touched the ear, he's like, don't touch me because I might get that cauliflower ear. Don't touch me. DC was like, yeah, yeah. And then DC still removed his headphone and rubbed his ear. Ugh.
He wants that wrestler. That wrestler pride.
Yeah, you know. And that was the crazy part. He was, look, DC was so hyper. He was like, oh my gosh. You feel like fans, you don't understand, but as a wrestler, that is a badge of honor, having that cauliflower ear. So for Adrian Yanez, who was basically primarily striking in this fight, to have that, I just had to touch it, and it was a badge of honor, and I'm truly proud of that young man. And it was like, really, DC? You had to rub the ear? Ugh.
It's a wrestler thing, you know. Like I said, cauliflower ears to wrestlers mean a lot. And plus, hey, cauliflower ears are now associated with toughness now. Now, apparently, guys know if you have a bar and they see a cauliflower ear, they know not to mess with you. Apparently,
That's the rule, which is crazy because, like, I've always thought, like, yo, you know, once they get it, that's it. And one time while I was training in the gym, because I told them, I don't want to wear the headset. I might get cauliflower ear, things of that nature. They was like, you know that all that is just fluid and that can be removed, right? And I was like, what? And I was like, fighters choose to live with that? And it was like, oh, some of them, like, they get it so much that they forget, you know, just living through life. And so they forget it. It hardens. And then after that, that's just it. I was like, but, just drain it.
Yeah, I know. But the worst is when it pops. Ooh, when someone punches it. Oh yes, that's happened before. It's not yet. I wish you guys in the audience could see this, but Dan is pretending to be dead. His reaction is so funny. I wish you in the audience could see this. His reaction is so disgusted by it. That what I just said. It's happened before in fights. It's not, trust me. It's, yeah, it's gross, but.
But see, look, I'm not gonna lie, man. I would pay for it, that for like every gym at least has a nearby doctor that they can talk to, that when a fighter gets cauliflower ear, because it can get popped during a fight and all that violence, throwing punch, things of that nature. Like, as soon as you see that cauliflower ear, you know, get the, you know, as soon as the cauliflower get the sprouting, we're like, nope, we gotta harvest it right now. Go to the doctor. We're going to drain that bad boy out.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, it looks like, but yeah, Adriana seemed to have a great performance in the nastiest cauliflower here. And one of good, one competitive fight is David Grant. But yeah, that cauliflower here, I mean.
Stop!
Okay.
Jeez! Well, oh man, look, let's move. Like, all right, that was an awesome fight by Adrian Yanez. And ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't check it out, you have to watch it. But also, I just want to break down two fights that I saw on the preliminaries that I told you I was looking out for these two fighters. And both fights went to a decision. Pat Sabatini versus Tucker Lutz. Pat Sabatini won via a unanimous decision from all three judges. I thought that it was, you know, it was a dominant performance for Pat Sabatini. He really just took Tucker Lutz down to grappling and just was dominant in that fashion all throughout all three rounds of that fight. So just a salute to Pat Sabatini, and I'm really watching his career. He moves on to 16-3, so I just, you know, look out, ladies and gentlemen. That guy is a really good fighter. Also, Lupita Godinez, she won her fight versus Numa Lukbumi. This went to the judges. All three judges scored it a unanimous decision. Lupi was able to mix it in via striking and grappling. I felt like that was she saw that maybe midway through the second and going into the third round, that was her best chance of winning the fight, because I don't want to sleep on Luma Lukbumi. She has great power with the hands. She had awesome striking. Her striking was very, very good. If anything, she just needs better grappling defense, and that would help her a long way with her career. But Lupi was awesome to the fight. She was awesome during the fight. And not only that, but she was so in control during the fight. There was a portion that made me laugh. It just really just tickled my fancy. But really, during the interlude from the second to the third round, she was looking at her trainers, and they told her, it's like, Lupi, you know there's no card next week, so you can't fight next week. She said, what? I can't fight next week? They said, yes. Like, so what am I going to do next week? I don't know. You just got to rest or something, but there's no fight next week. It's like, all right, well, try and get me on the next nearest card. And it's like, yo, she is hungry for competition.
This is a dirt fight in, what, 40-plus days, I think, right?
Give me 1 minute. I got to, like, I had to look it up.
I know she's 2-1 in these, you know, recent, like, three, like, recent fights, you know, these three fights she's had in recent time. But it's her fourth fight in the year. Also, I want to shout out to Robert Parr for, you know, commenting, for always being there for us. Salute to you, Robert Parr.
Oh man, Robert Parr. Me and Kev, we talk about you all the time, and just hope that you're doing great. We haven't seen you on the Knicks breakdown, but we're hoping that you're doing great. I gotta hit you up on Twitter, see how you're doing, man. Just, I hope your family and everything is doing well, and just salute to you, Robert Parr. But Lupi, she's had five fights in the year. She lost to Jessica Penn in a split decision in April. She had two canceled fights, one against Sarah Alpar, one against Sam Hughes. And then she fought in She fought Silvana Gomez Juarez. She won via armbar round one. She lost against Luana Carolina in a decision, unanimous. That was the fight where I thought she learned and made the adjustment to this fight in Luma Lugbumi, because the same thing that Luana did to her is what she essentially did to Luma Lugbumi, was mixing it up with the striking and more so just kind of taking it to grappling whenever she wanted to and dictating the pace of the fight. As long as she did that within the confines of the three rounds, that was the way she won the fight. And so, awesome fight for Lupi. And I hope she gets her, one more or two more fights in the year. She looks like she's healthy enough to go forward for it. So if she gets it and wins, then awesome year for her.
She's turned to the female Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland fought 5 times in 7 months. Now it's her 4th fight in a year. 3rd fight in last month, basically. She might be her 5th fight, potentially, in a year, which is really impressive. I mean, like I said, the week 2-1 in her, and within the 2-1 her last 3 fights, all within a month of each other, is pretty damn impressive. You gotta, tip your cap to her for that. So shout out to her. I mean, shout out to Lupi Godinez.
So, with that being said, that's the end of our breakdown for this recent card that just happened. We know that the UFC is essentially taking a week off?
Yeah, basically the week off. I mean, it's gonna be hard to put a card on Thanksgiving week. I mean, especially, American fighters, let's be honest. How many of them want to fight this week? Let's be honest. It's not even getting international fights coming also. So it kind of makes sense for them to take this week off.
Yeah, and then on top of that, this is the one thing I'm going to say about Dana White.
Go ahead.
Excuse my language. He isn't a dick. He isn't making someone cut weight during Thanksgiving. Let them enjoy dinner with their family. Let them eat. And then from there, you can, move on. But from there, we have the big UFC fight night.
Yep.
Rob Font versus Jose Aldo.
Woo! Next Saturday. Woo! What a great bantamweight fights. That's a big one. I mean, Rob Font, we talk about, Jan and Sterling going to fight, and then there's Dillashaw waiting in the wings. But Rob Font, if he can somehow be Aldo, can put himself in that conversation, that's something we can't ignore in that title picture.
Most definitely. Oh, my God. This wee!
That's definitely next weekend. Definitely look forward to that fight, and that's gonna be.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry for cutting you off, Austin, but I'm really just looking at this card now for the first time. I've just been so busy. They've got some fights on this card. They've got some fighters that I'm interested in. Looking at the main card, you have Rob Font versus Jose Aldo as the main event. Co-main event: Rafael Fiziev versus Brad Riddell. That I don't think is going the distance.
I think you're right about that one, man.
I don't think that is going the distance. Next fight right after that on the main card, Alonzo Menifield versus William Knight. I don't think that's going the distance either. Alonzo Menifield is he's very good. I don't think this goes the distance. Right after that, Brandon Allen versus Chris Curtis. We just saw Chris Curtis have an impressive come-from-behind victory.
Yeah.
So now he's right back on very impressive upset. So we're seeing him right back on the card getting a fight. I hope he impresses me yet again. My girlfriend's a huge fan of him, so hopefully he helps her win some money. Claudio Puelles versus Chris Grutzenmacher. That's going to be... Yeah, that's going to be an interesting preliminary fight. Jimmy Crute versus we have the return of Jamal Hill.
That's right. Return of both guys. Well, yeah, my bad. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Let me know what injury Jimmy Crute is coming from.
Remember he fought Anthony Smith and the Jacksonville card, first card with fans, and he had that he went for a leg kick or something. Something is like his foot got like all messed up. You don't remember that? It was the Jacksonville card. He was fighting Anthony Smith.
I don't know. I try to remove gruesome injuries out of my mind. Yeah. You see what I did with the so.
The problem was a Weidman injury happened also afterwards, so we forget about that. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's why I can't remember that, because the Weidman injury, and the crazy part is, I remember the Weidman injury. Yep. I remember Jamal Hill's injury. Paul Craig broke his arm, and that one I felt that was the referee's fault.
Yeah, that was the ref's fault. You're right about that.
I think the referee completely, because he tapped.
Yep.
The referee didn't see him tapping. Paul Craig, I don't know. Paul Craig did the right thing, even though Jamal Hill was tapping. He didn't feel the referee's hand, so he continued the submission. But then it is what it is. But, you know, I saw a picture that immediately after, you know, Jamal Hill got out the hospital and had surgery, him and Paul Craig had a beer together. So those two are all right, you know. Hopefully Jamal Hill recuperated wonderfully from that injury. And we see go ahead.
I'm surprised both guys are back considering how bad, especially Jamal Hill, since it was in June, his injury was. I'm surprised both guys are back.
Here's the thing. With Jamal Hill, it was a clean break. So because it was a clean break, I guess the bone, as long as they put it back together within the same night and let it heal naturally from there, he can kind of, you know, come back, things of that nature. I don't know if it is a broken arm. I don't know if it wasn't like he broke it throwing something. He broke it in the submission game. So, if anything, hopefully we'll see him get a more sense of urgency while in the submission game. But, Jimmy Crute, if that's a clean break as well, hopefully he healed properly as well. Both fighters, they're coming from a gruesome injury, so hopefully they, you know, can heal well. And both fighters are hampered, so we're not expecting too much from this fight, but these guys, they are known for knockout power, especially Jamal Hill. Then we have Manel Cop versus Zaglis. I don't want to butcher his last name. Zumagulov. Manel Cop, he had a very, very interesting a very interesting last fight. I believe he had a highlight reel knockout. So I've always said it about Manel Cop. Watching him fight, he's a guy who's very interesting. He just hasn't had a lot of activity. But if he ramps up the activity, he gives himself the best chance of winning majority of his fights. The skill is there. He just has to have the activity. And then with the activity, he'll know what to throw, when to throw it, and when not to throw it. And so he's got to give himself the best chance to win these fights. DC sees the same thing. Last fight, even though he had a highlight reel fight, he didn't make weight. So hopefully he makes weight for this fight, gives himself a better chance, because then he will be able to get that fight of the night bonus. He qualified for it, except for the fact that he didn't make weight. So, you know, Dana White ain't going to give no chubby fighters any fight of the night bonus.
No. Yep. Yeah, he won't. But yeah, see, this card definitely a lot of names, a lot of, you know, guys to look out for. I mean, got rising contenders would be, you know, Riddell and Rafael Fizet. Fiziev. And also Jimmy Crute and Jamal Hill were both rising contenders before their setbacks this year and injuries. Both were rising contenders in the lightweight division as both guys try to go back on track. Also, I'm trying to see if there's anybody. You also got a veteran in Clay Guida fighting against Leonardo Santos. So, interesting to see. You know, this could be Clay's last fight, potentially. You know, Clay's at that point where...
He's at that point. This is Clay's last fight.
You think this is, yeah, basically any fight he fights is the last fight. This could be it. I mean,
I want to keep it like just keeping it real.
Okay.
Prior to this, Clay's last fight was a co-main event. It was not the most entertaining main event. He looked gassed early on, and he doesn't look like he has the power for the division he's currently in. This looks to be his last fight.
Yeah, I think, now you think about it, you're probably right.
But we also have some interesting fighters. Luis Mocha versus Vince Morales. That's going to be an interesting bantamweight division fight. Oh, wow. I am waiting for this one. Maki Pitolo versus Dusko Todorovic. Dusko Todorovic, he is very, very interesting. Clean striker. He's a very clean striker. It's just the way he stands and the way he stands in the striking game is kind of awkward because it's like his hands are like too close and he kind of walks awkwardly. He leans back and forth. He's slim for his frame. He has a slim frame and he kind of just leans back and forth. But man, he's got some power behind those punches. Dusko Todorovic, that's a name, ladies and gentlemen, look out for because he is a KO artist.
Okay. Yep. Definitely. So that's this. You know, the UFC's taking a break, but comes back with some fights to a card with a lot of fights to look out for. Be you know, veterans like Clay Guida, legends like Jose Aldo, current contenders like, Rob Font, and then you got rising contenders and Brad right down Rafael Fiziev, Rafael Fiziev. And also crew and Jamal Hill. Yeah, so definitely a good bag, to watch, a good mixture of, contenders and fighters to watch. So definitely be interesting seeing. We'll break it a little bit more next week, that for sure. And anything else you want to say about the card?
No, I just want to let people know that the card starts at 7 p.m. So this is what? How many fights? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 fight card. So the main event will probably start around
11.
Yeah, 11. The main card will start around 11. The main event, the main fight will probably go on around 12, 1-ish. So just it's going to be an eventful night. We look forward to breaking down these fights, but we are going to take a break for Thanksgiving. UFC is going to take a break, so I guess we'll take a break as well for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Or do we have another card, maybe a Bellator to break down?
There is a Bellator card next weekend, the day before the Rob Font and
Sergio Pettis.
Yes, Pettis against Koji Horiguchi. By the way, whoever did the poster for this Bellator is, I don't know if it is for this Bellator show. They deserve a raise because the poster is pretty damn cool. The poster for the card. I wish I could show you it, but it's just go to the Bellator 272 poster. You'll see it. I'll send it to you then on text message. Once you see, go. Pretty nice poster. It's kind of the old Pride posters back in the day. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the old Japanese Pride posters where at least the pro their fights over there in Japan, Pride. But those posters were always pretty cool and badass. But yeah, that starts December. That's on December 3rd, the day before Rob Font, Jose Aldo, which is also in the bantamweight divisions. Koji Horiguchi tried to get his belt back against Sergio Pettis, makes his first title defense.
That's going down Friday, December 3rd at 10 p.m.
Yes,
on Showtime.
Yep.
Oh man, I can't find the poster.
Yeah. I don't know why. Hang on. You should get it now. But before we go, I just want to say, since we're Thanksgiving's a time to be thankful, things like that, reflect. I just want to, you know, ask, you know, talk about what we're thankful for MMA this year. And I'll go first. The thing I'm thankful for in MMA is the fact that we have fans again in the crowd. And the UFC became, you know, UFC in April decided to have pay-per-views with fans, full capacity. And annual UFC fights are great without fans. However, with fans, it's just a different atmosphere, and you truly forget how much you miss them until you see it, and then you realize fans, even though the UFC is fine without fans, but the fans do add something else to it, and it's kind of cool to see fans back. So it was kind of awesome to see the UFC become the first sport, I believe, to have full capacity, because I know the NFL was doing it, the NBA, but it was only like partial capacity. It wasn't like full capacity. And it's like these other leagues start only doing it once the UFC decided to go with it, it seems like. So I do want to get – I am thankful for that personally, MMA. I don't know if there's anything you're thankful for, Dan, or
– just thankful that coming out of the pandemic, I really didn't hear any news of any fighters from any promotion really passing away due to COVID. We heard some of them got it, but no one really passed away with it, so – it was just thankful that they were able to fight it. Like, they're fighters at the end of the day. And the beautiful thing about fighters is it's not about, you know, trying to keep a perfect record. You know, it's a fight every day. And the saying is you win some, you lose some, but you live to fight another day. And that's what fighters do. And so they were able to, you know, the fighters that did contact it, they were able to fight through it. You know, they did say their health was compromised. We have a guy in Khamzat Chimaev who was able to put on a impressive performance that he did, but that was only after fighting COVID for as long as he did and trying to recuperate from it. The other thing I'm thankful for is that just while the pandemic was happening, we saw a lot of, like, we saw the fighters that were that, you know, that when they couldn't get access to their gym, they were able to stay at home, stay disciplined, sharpen their skills. And those fighters are getting the accolades that they truly deserve in today's day. We see it in even a guy like, you know, granted, he didn't fight during the pandemic when there was no audience, but he did show up recently. A guy in, what's his name? Yair Rodriguez. He, you know, had some concerns, things of that nature, but he was able to stay consistent. Max Holloway, we saw that due to the pandemic, he was not able to train in his gym, but he was able to train at home and do certain things that were necessary for him to stay sharp. You have a guy in Corey Sandhagen was able to do the same. A lot of these fighters, and even some of the champion fighters who we feel, you know, they even though they may not have been able to get to access to their gyms, they were able to stay sharp. So just thankful for those fighters. They stayed safe, they stayed sharp, and were able to put on shows and be consistent athletes that kept themselves in shape and just giving themselves a fighting chance. And that ultimately keeps you safer in the ring, giving yourself a fighting chance.
Definitely, yeah. And like I said, this, you know, that, like I said, that's our thoughts for being thankful for MMA this year. Like I said, this is, you know, time to be thankful for Thanksgiving, and thankful for, we're thankful for everybody watching us. Whether you're watching us live, like Robert R, or Alex earlier, or Smoot, or Smoot Mix Texas talking about the Knicks, playing Knicks won against the Lakers.
Yeah, we won earlier tonight. Salute to Mix Texas. I was talking with you earlier. We were all on the chat just, you know, having a good talk about what the Knicks needed to do in order to win, and they capped it off. It was, you know, it was a closer game than we would have liked, but at the same time, smooth Mix Texas. You know how our Knicks are. Cardiac Knicks. It happens. But salute to you, man, and thank you so much for supporting the BX Sports Jedi Network. You see in that, we may do basketball earlier, but you see, we break down the combat sports. You see, Kev, he also has the Yankees. He breaks down the Yankees. When he gets a chance, he's going to start on the Rangers, things of that nature. We also have to break down the New York football teams at some point. Some big news just happened with my Giants, so we'll discuss it all at some point. But Yeah, the sports network is growing right now, and just salute and thanks to you. Thanks for you guys for supporting. Also, thanks for you guys also supporting the merch store. We have a lot of merch right now. Wore this during the game. Good luck charm. I think I might wear this for the next game. We're facing the red hot Phoenix Sun, so we need this. So a salute to you guys supporting the merch store. But if you haven't yet, go. The link is right there in the description. Go there, salute it. Go there and support the merch store. But also check us out. Also breaking down the MMA game and the basketball game, and breaking down the Yankees offseason in podcast form. You can get that in Anchor FM, Podbean, Spotify, and what's the last one?
Spotify. I pulled up right now. Give me a minute. Buzzsprout.com.
Yeah, Buzzsprout.com. It's Anchor FM, Spotify, Podbean, Reason FM, and Buzzsprout.com. And we are, like, just to take notice, we are noticing the support that we're getting on Spotify. We see that the numbers are growing every day in the number of listeners. So salute to you guys for supporting. Thank you so much. We're thankful for the support. We don't ask much, but just, you know, listening to us, because we're fans like you guys. We just decided to hop on, and regardless of whatever takes we do, hot, cold, indifferent, stupid, smart, we're going to let it go, because we're fans at the end of the day, and what we're seeing, we're kind of just breaking down from our point of view.
Definitely. I like that last statement. I 100% agree with everything Chef Dan just said. You know, but we're just people, fans. We're just fans in the day, just doing our pain, no matter if we're smart, dumb, what, hot, cold, whatever. We're just fans getting our point of view of what we feel about what we saw. And definitely, and thank you, like I said, thank you everyone. Like I say, who's live with us, would be, you know, Robert, Parr, Mix Texas, Alex, or Maria, or anyone watching us afterwards, whether you're watching us on YouTube or listening to us, excuse me, on these audio platforms. Thank you. We appreciate you. Me and Dan do. My dad appreciates you. And thank you guys for watching this, you know, watching this channel, whether it's the Knicks stuff, the Yankee stuff, or the football stuff, or anything in general. We appreciate you guys. We're thankful for everybody. We're thankful for everybody basically listening to us, enjoying our content. Doesn't matter if you're from America, Philippines, you know, the world, international viewers. We appreciate you all. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you for support and love. We truly appreciate you guys. And anything you want to say before we wrap up the show, Dan?
Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. Be safe and have a good night.
Yep. That most definitely. I echo that statement. And from that, well, we're going to end the show here. Thank you guys for watching. We look forward to talking to you guys next week. And like I said, have a happy Thanksgiving to all the Americans to celebrate, and have a great week to everyone else, whether you're international. And we'll see, and stay safe, guys, and we'll see you guys next time. Peace.